We will resume. The case is United States v. Rollins, 13-17-31. Mr. Henderson.
Good morning. May it please the Court. Mr. Rollins is challenging both the term of imprisonment and the term of supervised release. The government's conceded the latter, so I'll focus on the former. And again, we have in front of the Court the interpretation of the residual clause to the career offender guideline. This has been an issue that's been before this Court and the Supreme Court numerous times in the last few years. And the main question, I think, or the resolution of the question, has two components. One is a legal component, which we feel really requires the Court to treat these two texts identically. And the other is a practical concern for the continued interpretation in this Court and in the District Court of which offenses are a crime of violence or a violent felony. For the legal question, I think the government and Mr. Rollins agree on almost everything in terms of what the applicable cases are. Stinson versus United States says that unless the text of the guideline is inconsistent with the application note, then the application note is going to control, that we give deference to the Sentencing Commission. And so the question is, does the text here, the residual clause, where an offense that otherwise involves conduct that presents a serious potential risk of physical injury to another, contradict the Commission's determination that possession of a sawed-off shotgun is a crime of violence? This Court, of course, has said in Miller that we don't think that the latent risks inherent in that offense, possessing a sawed-off shotgun, are sufficient to qualify for the residual clause. Now, of course, that's in the Section 924E context, which has the identical language. This Court has held numerous times identity of language means we're going to treat it identically. And the main case here is Woods. The government's main argument is these are different things, the guidelines versus the statute. They don't deal with the same thing. But in United States versus Woods, which was distributed to the full court, this court applied the analysis under Section 924E to the career offender guidelines. And so unless the court is going to overrule Woods, which I'd submit it cannot do without a full court rehearing, I think the court is bound by its prior decision. Now, ROP presents somewhat of a problem.
Didn't ROP throw a monkey wrench into it?
What's that?
Didn't ROP throw a monkey wrench into it?
Well, it threw a monkey wrench into it. And that's the thing is, and again, this is the legalistic kind of formulation, ROP couldn't overrule Woods either, and it didn't purport to.
Are you asking us to overrule ROP?
No, because ROP presented a different scenario. In ROP, we had an argument where we have no decisions on what Section 924E means about conspiracy or attempt. I forget which one it was, an inchoate offense. And the guideline says that it is a crime of violence. So in that scenario, there's no contradiction of the text. And in fact, I think if the court had analyzed it under 924E, it might have come to the same conclusion, that it was a violent felony. In this case, we have the court saying the text says of the residual clause that this is not a violent felony, possession of a sawed-off shotgun. And the text really that's appropriate is the enumerated offenses that come before the residual clause, because that informs what the residual clause means. And the court says, well, it's not similar in risk to burglary of a dwelling, arson, extortion, or use of explosives. So ROP, I think, has a lot of, I'd say, dicta in it, reasoning and logic that evaluate the persuasiveness of certain authority. So I don't think that this court would need to overrule ROP because I don't think it addresses the same question. The question really
It does address the question about whether we defer to the Sentencing Commission's categorical inclusion of certain kinds of offenses in the residual clause of the guidelines by way of an application note. I mean, that's basically the rule of the case.
That's right, and that's just a reiteration of Stinson. I mean, that's what Stinson says, is the application notes, unless they're inconsistent with the text of the guideline, control. But in this case, they, you know, it's kind of a more theoretical question of what is text. You know, what does this text mean? And I thought that the Supreme Court's decision in Circuit City Stores was instructive as to what is text. There they considered a residual clause that was preceded by enumerated offenses, and they didn't say that, you know, our interpretation, our judicial gloss on this statute that could go either way is that, you know, this category of workers is included. They said, no, the text compels it. And I think the same is true of the text of the guidelines. I think if you take ROP too far, you take the government's position in this appeal, you would have to elevate that application note to be enumerated offenses within the guideline. You'd have to be saying not only is burglary, arson, extortion, use of explosives enumerated offenses that we base the residual clause off of, but also all these offenses that the Sentencing Commission says in their application note. And ROP says basically, I mean, the argument is, if this were in the guideline, the argument would be sunk, and that's true. But it's not in the guideline, and Stinson has continued vitality. ROP affirmed that. And because it does, there is a difference between what the guideline says, the residual clause, and those four enumerated offenses.
But as I understand your argument, basically you're saying limit ROP to its facts, ignore its reasoning, and start over with a Stinson analysis. Is that a fair summary of what you're saying?
Well, I'm not sure. I think that that's probably correct. But really the question in my mind is, how does ROP exist in a world where Woods is still good law? Because Woods did apply the reasoning of Section 924E to the guidelines. And if you take ROP, for example, the crime of reckless homicide, Begay and Woods tell us that recklessly committed offenses cannot be either crimes of violence or violent felonies. But the commission lists manslaughter in that application note one as a crime of violence.
Reckless homicide is an example of why this whole area of the law is completely incoherent.
Well,
because
that,
if reckless homicide is not a crime of violence, I don't know what is, but it's out by virtue of Begay and Woods.
Right.
And Woods was faithfully following Begay, but Begay is out the window now. So, I mean, this whole construct is
and that really
mind-blowing.
That's a good segue to the practical concerns that I have. Before the court really treated 924E and the guidelines as the same, ROP kind of throws the wrench in, and now for every single offense that comes up under the residual clause, we're going to have to litigate it twice. We're going to have to litigate it under both the guidelines and Section 924E. And the court isn't going to be able to give the guidance to the district court, where really all these issues are mostly decided, as to if I have an offense under Wisconsin law, what is it? Is it a crime of violence? Is it a violent felony? Can I use one case to determine the other? Because if you look at the court's decision in Miller, I don't see how a district court judge could not be utterly baffled by the fact that the application note says one thing, but the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals, which I'm bound to follow, says that this doesn't have the risks inherent in the enumerated offenses. So I think for the practical reason going forward, it is, you know,
Judge Kaney, it's also possible, as we may have seen in this series of cases, we got it wrong.
I'm sorry, I didn't quite.
Last year, a person entering the federal building in Las Vegas with a sawed-off shotgun concealed under his raincoat, and then killing a CSO the first crack out of the box. Now, if a sawed-off shotgun, which has a wide range of discharge of pellets, and the ability to conceal isn't have those aspects to it, I don't know what it does.
Well, I think that's a reasonable point. And again, it's principles of stare decisis at that point. The court has said that the text of the residual clause means that mere possession rather than use, and I think that's maybe a difference in the examples, but mere possession does not have the risks inherent. I would reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Fine, thank you. Mr. Proctor.
Thank you. Thank you. May it please the Court. Ben Parker for the United States. I just want to take issue at the outset with comments by appellant's counsel that in order to decide this case in favor of the United States, you need to overrule Woods. I don't think that that's necessary at all. I think Woods, Raup, and Miller can all coexist because there's a distinction between the sentencing guidelines and the Armed Career Criminal Act. In practice, by statutory invention or by origin, and by how it's applied throughout the country. And I just want to step back as well and look at this case because I think it gives an example of how the guidelines apply in practice. Here we have a defendant convicted of two counts of distributing crack cocaine. Each count carried a maximum sentence of 20 years, no mandatory minimum. He had over a dozen prior convictions, two of which, the sawed-off shotgun possession and another distribution offense, qualified him as a career offender. The government recommended a sentence of 87 months, which was below the guidelines based on certain facts. The defense recommended a sentence of 57 months, which was well below the guidelines. The district court, applying the factors under 3553A, came up with a sentence of 84 months. It is able to do that. It is able to take to look at the guidelines, take what it feels.
That sounds like a harmless error argument.
And my point with this argument, Your Honor, is to just show the distinction here, to focus on the distinction between the guidelines and the Armed Career Criminal Act, because that's what the appellant wants us. He wants to focus that the interpretation of the Armed Career Criminal Act has to mirror, for all unenumerated offenses, those under the guidelines, regardless of any guidance provided by the Sentencing Commission. And that overlooks the specific role of the guidelines and the Sentencing Commission in promulgating guidelines, interpreting those guidelines, providing guidance to the district courts. There's no statutory mandate that 4B1.2 and 924E be interpreted exactly the same. They inform each other, the language is similar, and they can continue to do that for unenumerated offenses. However, here we have an unenumerated offense for both the guidelines and the Armed Career Criminal Act that the Sentencing Commission has specifically weighed in on. It has provided guidance to the district court as to what it believes in its overall purpose qualifies as a crime of violence for the career offender guidelines and as that crime of violence provision may be cross-referenced through other statutes such as the firearms possession under 2K.
As a practical matter, how is possession of a sawed-off shotgun, just mere possession of it, a crime of violence?
Well, go ahead.
When you equate it with burglary and arson and use of explosives and...
Well, as this court has articulated in Brazo in particular, where it did hold that possession of a sawed-off shotgun was a crime of violence, is the inherent dangerous nature of possession.
That's gone after Miller, right?
Well,
unless we're going to overrule Miller, the analysis of risk has been decided in Miller.
In Miller, it has been decided for purposes of 924E.
But as judges, we don't revisit that. We accept that as a judicial matter. The only overlay here is that the Sentencing Commission disagrees. And the question is whether we're deferring to the Sentencing Commission or not. And that's a question that implicates the validity of the reasoning in the Raup decision. Which is unquestionably in tension with what we said in Woods.
Yes, Your Honor, and then I will focus on that. And to the extent that there is tension, I believe that the Raup decision is guided by the Supreme Court decision in Stinson. It holds that where the Sentencing Commission has provided specific guidance, that guidance must control unless it is inconsistent with or essentially plainly erroneous. Here, the underlying text or the underlying statutes of putting forth the applicable guideline, 26 USC 994H, and the specific guideline itself do not say one way or the other whether or not a possession of a sawed-off shotgun is a crime of violence. So therefore, it's difficult to find that the guidelines, the commission, has put forward a comment specifically on point that is in conflict or plainly erroneous given the background in which it's applying. But I also note that in Miller had left open in comments that there can be a distinction between interpretation of the residual clause under 4B1.2 and 924E. It decided, it looked to the commentary regarding possession of a sawed-off shotgun. It decided that it wasn't going to rely on that for the holding in that case, but it did acknowledge that even if Miller's conviction qualified as a crime of violence under 4B1, it doesn't lend support for interpreting the Armed Career Criminal Act.
Right, we've got the inverse here.
Mm-hmm. We do. You do, Your Honor, but here it goes to show that these are two separate statutes or two separate provisions that can be interpreted differently. And other courts that have addressed this exact same question have determined that possession of a sawed-off shotgun can qualify as a crime of violence under 4B1.2 while at the same time not qualifying as a violent offense under...
Does that make any sense at all?
It does, Your Honor, if... it is understood that these are different provisions that...
They're different provisions, but they say the exact same thing. And if we're to have any intellectual consistency here, I think, you know, you have to apply the same risk analysis evaluative process.
I agree, Your Honor, that is, and that is that to be consistent with past cases of this court, where there's an unenumerated offense... that is not addressed by the Sentencing Commission, the same analysis can apply. However, when the Sentencing Commission comes in, there is a hurdle to that the court would have to say that the Sentencing Commission has promulgated a commentary in violation of the controlling guidance provided by Stinson.
Right, which is that if the guidance, in other words, the application note, is inconsistent with the text of the guideline itself, then we don't defer to it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I need you to grapple with that question about whether the categorical inclusion of the possession of a sawed-off shotgun offense is or is not inconsistent with the text of the guidelines, the residual clause in the guidelines.
I remember, as Judge Gilbert made, that the Sentencing Commission was going to straighten all this out. But as Judge Sykes pointed out, that doesn't seem to be the case.
Yes, Your Honor. The way the Sentencing Commission's commentary regarding the possession of a sawed-off shotgun before Miller, in this case, in this circuit, was entirely consistent. It's one of the reasons it wasn't even objected to at the district court level.
Well, except for this application note has not been revisited since the upheaval in residual clause jurisprudence at the Supreme Court. And that's Judge Kaney's point. I think that they haven't gone back to it.
And on that point, Your Honor, I think the takeaway from that is that the Sentencing Commission is directed to continually review cases, review the general development of the law. We assume that it has, and it has specifically noted in other commentary in the guidelines and these guidelines itself that it doesn't consider violent felonies under 924E to be the same or have the same definition as crime of violence. I understand that the language is very similar, but the Sentencing Commission sees its role as broader. It has enumerated several other crimes of violence in commentaries, in the commentary and application note one, that also aren't in, there is no equivalent for commentary under 924E.
But when was the last time application note one was changed, revisited? if you know?
Your Honor, I don't know the last time Application Note 1 was changed. I do know that this provision was added around 2004 based on the Commission's interpretation of congressional need and or congressional action in pushing forward the Firearms Registration Act and various guidance from this court. I see my time is up.
Before you sit down, I'd like to just clarify the government's position on the standard of review and the question of harmlessness, since this was a below-guideline sentence. Mm-hmm. What is the government's position? I mean, this is a plain error standard of review, but I haven't heard that argued from the podium, but you're not retreating from that, I take it.
No, Your Honor. My understanding, based on cases from this circuit, is that if this qualifies as an erroneous application of the guidelines as calculated by the district court, there's nothing in my review of the record that the district judge specifically said I would impose the sentence regardless of any guideline calculation. Had he said that, I would make a different argument, but my review of the record doesn't indicate that.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Henderson, you've got a minute in rebuttal.
Just briefly, I think that, Judge Sykes, you touched on this, and I think you used the phrase intellectual consistency. Really, that's the concept of ambiguity, and it may not be important in this case because this is the guidelines, and we don't have the same constitutional due process protections. But if the court says that the residual clause means one thing here and with the identical language means a different thing here, when you get to the statute, 924E, I can't see how a defendant can't say, I have no notice of what subjects me to a 15-year mandatory minimum and what doesn't. I think that's the definition of ambiguity. So that's one of the reasons I would suggest that the court find that the application note is inconsistent with the guideline. Thank you.
Thank you. Our thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.